All right, good morning, golfers. Welcome to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Thank you for joining me on this Saturday, July 9th, 2016. Pleased to have in studio Steve Goldman. How you doing, man?
Anthony, man, I'm fired up. Phil shot 69 yesterday to make the cut. I'm heading over to Jersey to pick up my PGA championship credentials today. Couldn't be a better day.
Yes, you continue your annual stewardship of joining the volunteers. How long have you been doing volunteer work? Now, seriously.
Well, the current run. Well, this will be number five for the Barclays. I started with the Barclays back in 2012 when it was at Bethpage. The first tournament I actually volunteered at was the 2004 U.S. Amateur, which was at Wingfoot. And
what a dog track that place.
And I hadn't done one every year because I only, let's see, the PGA Tour didn't have a regular stop in the area,
right.
Although I guess you could consider Westchester kind of in the area, but I didn't know. I mean, I was so naive about the whole volunteering in the first place. I just happened to get in 2004, I just happened to get an email from the USGA saying, you know, hey, you know, there's a championship in the neighborhood, you know, volunteer. And I said, look, you know, I'm a teacher. I'm on summer vacation. You know, it's a week in August. You know, let me check it out. Let me see what it's all about. And, you know, just fell in love with just being involved with the operation of a championship and had such a great time that every opportunity after that, I started looking to USGA events to volunteer. But
right.
Know, there's always plenty of time for us to talk about that.
Yeah, no, I've always, you know, I admire, I mean, those events, they don't get put on without without volunteers and all the events and the amount that you've been doing, the length, it's just impressive. You know, you've done it pretty much every year for the last 10 years, really.
Well, especially when the Barclays, like I said, when the Barclays came around to Bethpage in 2012, I said, look, I can't pass this up. I mean,
yeah.
I worked the 09 Open that was at Bethpage. I worked the 06 Open when it was at Wingfoot. I worked the 2011 Open at Congressional, that was on a weekend because the problem for us as teachers, you know, first world teacher problems, is the U.S. Open is always during the first week of final exams, and the problem is that it's kind of hard to, you know, tell your supervisors, sorry, I can't proctor final exams because I got to go to Bethesda, Maryland and work a golf tournament. It's kind of hard to swing that. So
right.
So I've kind of limited myself for USGA championships, unless, for example, the U.S. Women's Amateur, which was a few years ago at Nassau Country Club, that schedule was perfect for me, so I was able to work that also.
Right. Well, we've got a lot of stuff to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting times in the golf world. So
oh, yes.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in 30 seconds. Oh, actually, 1 minute. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
The Long Island Golf Association is a nonprofit organization of 81 private and public clubs. The LIGA conducts 15 championships annually and works closely with the Long Island Caddy Scholarship Fund. The scholarships are granted to young men and women who are employed at member clubs. For more information on how you can participate in a championship, or if you'd like to donate your time as a volunteer, please call the LIGA at 516-746-1015. That's 516-746-1015, or visit us at www.longislandgolf.org. Is your inspection due? Are you tired of listening to that noise your car is making? If you're looking for a reliable shop to service your car, try A1 Action Auto for all your car service needs. A1 Auto is a New York State certified shop, and owner Ed Terabile has over 25 years of experience. A1 Action Auto is conveniently located off Sunrise Highway in West Islip, so pick up the phone and call A1 Action Auto at 631-321-4242. That's 631-321-4242.
All All right, welcome back to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. My co-host today is Steve Goldman, friend of mine, co-hosted plenty of times with us now, and always a pleasure to have him in studio. The saying is, may you live in interesting times. And so I think when you think of the world of golf and what is going on, we are living in some interesting times. When you think about the U.S. Open and the USGA debacle, when you think about the tragedy in West Virginia canceling event, when you think about the Scottish Open and they put out a rules notice that says, FYI, even if you have your coin down, just means that you have the ability to pick up the ball. It doesn't mean that the ball's not in play. It means the ball is in play. So they're sort of extending the good run of rules.
You would think the European Tour would take their cue from the USGA and say, you know what? Let's let the players play and let's get out of the way and let's not us be the story. And then what happens in round one? They have 40-mile-an-hour winds. They set up the golf course where it's virtually impossible. Now, granted, look, it's the same golf course for everybody theoretically. So, you know what? If everybody shoots 80, they shoot 80. But obviously you want, you know, the golfers, as they say, you know, you want a fair test. I mean, it doesn't have to, you know, we're not looking to shoot 20 under every week. But by the same token, you have the 18th hole, which is a 600-yard par 5 into a wind, and they said the hole's playing 800 yards. So, you know, why not?
Yeah, it's just and to me, the European Tour always seems to have, for the most part, have always seemed to have gotten things a little better. Or their mistake seems to be less spectacular. And so,
well, they're also on a smaller stage. I mean, when the USGA puts on a championship, especially the US Open, I mean, not just the United States is watching it, the world is basically watching. You know, you wouldn't even, you probably half the golfing, you know, half the casual golf fan doesn't even know that there's a tournament going on right now called the Scottish Open.
Right.
And would care less about who cares if it's windy. Now maybe next week at the Open Championship, they'll turn on the TV and they'll see, and if they see 40-mile-an-hour winds and greens running 10 on the stimp meter and balls rolling all over the place, they might say, yeah, that looks a little unfair. I wonder if the European Tour is going to do anything about it.
Well, they did have that one little mistake where they brought at the Open Championship, what is it, a couple of years ago, where they put those players out in the loop, so to speak, at St. Andrews when the winds were,
yes,
way too high.
Right.
I keep saying it, and I know you can't connect the dots, but it did cost Jordan Spieth a bogey when he was out there for
absolutely
an hour and a half, and that was one where Brooks Koepka was made like a big deal about it while he was out there.
Well, sure, because it was last year, and they should have taken everybody off the golf course, but you know, they have the Europeans have a very different view, especially when it comes to the Open Championship. They have a different view about what is acceptable playing conditions, because you know full well that if this was happening in the United States, especially at let's say a prestigious championship like the U.S. Open, they would have said it's the golf course is unplayable. We need to take people off the course until it calms down.
I think the only thing that they haven't sort of been up to speed with, and no pun intended, is the green speeds.
Yes,
and that's the problem. That was the problem with the U.S. Open. And it was a problem at St. Andrews. If you're going to maintain certain greens, you can't actually maintain certain green speeds. Now, those, you know, as Augusta likes to say, tournament speeds,
right,
are different on the USGA than it is in St. Andrews, because
they have to be.
They have to be. But even they're not. Even they're not adjusting accordingly. You know, case in point, last year at St. Andrews, right?
Right.
The green speeds are too fast for those winds. Yes, you do have different criteria for playing conditions, but then you have to have a different green speed, you know, a suitable and accommodating green speed to, you know, it's got to be 10, not 12.
And common sense has to prevail. The problem is that the golfers have gotten so good. They hit the ball miles, and especially in a links style golf course where the ball runs forever, it becomes a very delicate decision to say, okay, well, how do we set up the course So they're not going to shoot 30 under, but by the same token, we want to make it so that it's a fair, reasonable test. But, you know, as we've seen in the past, not just with the Open Championship, but what also with the U.S. Open is they love teetering these courses right on the brink of disaster. And, you know, the first thought comes to mind is the 2004 U.S. Open at Shinnecock, where it took a long time, but the USGA kind of admitted, they said, yeah, we kind of let the golf course get away from us. And I said, you know, duh, we all knew that. we all knew that. We all saw it. The pros saw it. I mean, I think one of the problems is that when you're too close to the situation, like the pros, when the pros say, look, the course is unfair, they say, all right, let the pros whine. You know, they always whine about the course being unfair. They want, you know, pristine fairways, and they want, you know, greens that are receptive to shots and so forth. But for the most part, those are the guys that are on the golf course, and those are the ones that know what championships they're playing, and they understand what the situation is. And I don't think that they're given enough credit or their voice is heard enough on these major championships about setup and about whether or not it's a fair setup. Because there's a fine line between a reasonable setup and a fair setup.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's a good point that you make, because I think, like any good coach, he wants his players grumbling a little bit.
Yeah.
And he, you know, it means that he's getting what he, and for the most part, he's doing what he had intended to do, or she intended to do.
It's like a baseball umpire. When everybody's mad at you, you know you're doing a good job.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And so it's exactly right. And I think you make a good point. I think, and to be fair, a little bit to the USGA, people like Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson have been prone to, try to use, you know, say complaints, make complaints, because they want certain outcomes,
of course,
against the USGA. So they're battling, you know, there's the psychological battle between the USGA and the players, and the players back, you know, they've used their status, so to speak, to try and influence what the USGA does to their benefit.
Well, because they're also very outspoken players. The TV cameras are willing to put a microphone in front of their face and ask them questions. And unlike most people, which give diplomatic, bland answers, you know, Phil and Tiger will tell you what's on their mind, and they'll always, you know, to sometimes to a fault, but they'll tell you exactly how they feel, and they're honest with the questions that are being asked of them. And like you said, sometimes it comes off as, you know, rich people whining, or, you know, I'm so sorry that you know, the rough is 3 inches high, you know, 2 feet off the fairway, but you know what? Keep it in the fairway, and then you don't have to worry about it.
Right, exactly. And to get back to your original point, because I don't want to let this go, and that...
Nor should you.
The difficulty
don't
of...
Don't let it go.
The difficulty of setting up golf courses for the pros could be remedied much more easily if they had not let the ball get out of control. And that's
true.
The ball goes too far.
Right.
And it has gone too far for too long. And the bottom line is, I mean, you look at Marion and what they did to that golf course. I mean, they had to choke those fairways down to 20 yards in certain places. Or, you know, the bottom line, you just can't accommodate. You know, you're gonna have to stop with all these historic golf courses because there's just no way guys get bigger, stronger, faster, and the ball's going way too far. You just can't make a course harder by making the greens 13 or 14 on the stimp meter.
No, and I think the one golf course that you can look at, which I think has been the most resistant to change, but reluctantly, is Augusta National. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've had to put in back tees. They've had to make holes a lot longer than they used to be because of that point. I mean, now 11 is a 500-yard par 4. You know, they really can't do too much with some of the par fives like 13 and 15. There's no place to build.
Oh,
a
but
team.
They are though. They buy.
I mean, they're going to try.
Yeah.
So then, what did they have to do? Well, they had to make the course a little more difficult. So they start growing rough because you know Augusta National used to be traditionally known as well. You don't necessarily have to be in the fairway to score well at Augusta. So they had to put something up because otherwise, like you said, with the distances that the ball is traveling, I mean. Guys are going to shoot, you know, if you shoot 68, that was like par at Augusta for a while with 68 because, you know, pretty much you were guaranteed a birdie on all the par fives. And then you try to, you know, you try to make your way around the golf course on the other holes. So they had to do something to make the golf course defensible. So, okay, you're right. So then it becomes green speeds. And now all of a sudden they have to land balls and they have to putt balls on tabletops because that's the only defense that a golf course can do because, like you said, if you can't buy more land, you can't make the golf course longer, then you've got to use what you have and make it more difficult.
Except Augusta will buy more land because they can. Because they can. But other courses can't. And I just, you know, at what point is it become, you know, at what point are they going to need to – are they going to wake up? What is it going to take for them to realize that this is that it, not that the cat's out of the bag, the cat is gone.
Absolutely.
And like, what is it going to take for the USGA to sort of, and the RNA to come to its senses? What has to happen?
I don't think there really is anything that's going to happen because to me, the answer is when somebody says I'm not playing. When somebody says, I've either qualified or gotten an exemption and it's just, I just don't like the way they operate and I'm not going to play. And they're never going to say that because especially for a national championship like the United States Open, I mean, who is going to turn down an opportunity to play in the U.S. Open? And okay, yeah, I'll grit my teeth and I'll grin and bear it and say, you know what? It's the same golf course for everybody. I just got to be, you know, they always say they want to, they don't want to punish the golfer. They want to identify the best golfer. You know, which is a nice party line for the United States Golf Association, but it's difficult to say what it's going to take because unless they just decide to unionize and boycott and just say, look, we're not playing at this venue because it's just completely an unfair test, and until you make it at least a reasonably fair test, then we're not going to participate.
Yeah, no, and that lies the problem. That's not likely to happen. And so I feel like the vicious cycle will just continue on and on, and we'll lose great golf courses to host championships. We'll build new ones, yes, but the, you know, golf, professional golf and golf is such a you know, we cherish the history of it. And with that history are golf courses. And you know, there's very fewer and fewer are going to be able to stand the test of time. Augusta's always going to stand the test of time. Oakmont's always going to stand the test of time. Shinnecock's always going to stand the test of time.
Yep.
You know,
Wingfoot
always. And
Pebble Beach.
And Pebble Beach.
Until half of it falls into the ocean.
Well, exactly. So my point is that if we want to keep the full body of that history of golf courses, something's going to have to give.
Right. We might even end up, you might even end up with a rota of United States Open venues.
Right. And I think, you know, I don't know if our rota is going to, I mean, do we have a big enough rota? That's a good question.
It might not be.
All right. Something to ponder.
Yes.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in 30 seconds. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
Pete's Golf. Since 1979, Pete's Golf has been practicing the art of club fitting and has been selected as a top 100 club fitter by Golf Digest magazine. At Pete's Golf, we use the best technology available to create an exceptional fitting experience for every customer that walks into our store. Visit petesgolf.com or call 516-248-6891. That's 516-248-6891 and get your next set of clubs fit for you.
All right, welcome back to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Thank you for joining me. And Steve and I should say, Steve is in studio. All right, we've got, speaking of the USGA and all the fun stuff.
Yes.
The Women's Open, the Women's U.S. Open, I should say, at Cordoval. And a sort of interesting, you know, we've got a decent leaderboard. Not many Americans up top just yet. Although I do, I'm a big Lydia Ko fan, so nice to see her up there.
Yeah, she had a great round yesterday, 66, I believe.
66 is exactly right. And the next, the American, the closest American at -4, leaders at -8, and that's Sung Yoon Park. And then Daniel Kang at -4, and Jessica Korda at -4. And Christy Kerr was up there for after day one, but then ended up shooting 75 the second day.
Well, they had terrible winds yesterday, especially late in the day. The scores were definitely higher. You know, women's golf is always a very interesting sort of dynamic because I actually enjoy watching women's golf.
Yeah,
because,
sure.
You know, obviously I love watching men's golf and I love watching the PGA Tour, but what those guys do, I can't even comprehend or even fathom what they're able to do. I mean, these guys are hitting, you know, 200-yard seven irons.
Sure.
You know, they're carrying their drive, you know, 295 off the tee. I mean, these are numbers that I can't relate to.
Sure.
But when you watch women's golf, I totally relate to everything they do. Every time they talk about what yardage they have and what club they hit, I say, well, that's the same club I would hit. Or I would watch and I would see them hit the ball, you know, 200 yards off the tee, dead center. And I said, well, I wish I could do that. And there was nothing that was more eye-opening, because I mentioned this before at the top of the show, when I volunteered at the U.S. Women's Amateur a few years ago, which is at Nassau Country Club, and I saw some people that were not even or barely 5 foot tall, could not hit the ball more than 200 yards off the tee, and were still scoring 73, 74 on a golf course. And it really opened my eyes to the talent. And I said, look, you know, the gender issue, you know, man versus women, it's not very exciting and everything. But if you want to see, especially this week where there is no PGA Tour event, because as you mentioned, the flooding in West Virginia that canceled the Greenbrier, you want to see championship level golf. It wouldn't be a bad idea to tune into the U.S. Women's Open, because I believe it's relatable not just to females, but I think it's relatable to males, because they do hit the ball pretty much the same distance that an average golfer would hit it. They're just a million times better.
Sure. I used to liken it to, and quite frankly, it's a much more, it's twice the fan experience. I've been to a couple of LPGA events, and the ladies, they get it. And,
yeah.
You know, I know I get why they get it. I get that they don't have the money, and they don't,
right.
You know, the PGA pros, they don't, part of it is they don't really need us, you know, so
that's
to
right.
speak. The LPGA players, they know they need us, and so the fan experience is just, it's 180 degrees. I mean, they can't be nicer, they can't be more interactive. I loved it.
I will say this though, for the women's Open especially, it wasn't so much for the women's amateur. The women's amateur was a nicer experience, but for the women's Open, the pace of play is deplorable.
Yes,
I mean,
yes.
If you thought the pace of play on a men's event is slow
yes.
and deliberate, at a women's Open, especially when they play in threesomes on the first 2 days. You need to pretty much pack a lunch, because you'll have plenty of time to take a couple of bites out of that sandwich in between shots, because deliberate is being kind.
Yes. No, it's a good point. To get back to my original point,
yes.
was the idea that I just feel like I used to liken it to the WNBA and the NBA.
Right.
Like, I used to like to watch the WNBA and the way they move the ball,
yes.
the way they play versus the NBA, which is basically with just one-on-ones and dunking and whatever.
Right. Cause the women can't play above the rim. So
right.
it's gotta be a better style of basketball. It emphasizes passing and shooting and things like that.
Right. And movement and
right.
cutting and all this stuff.
Exactly.
Like, it's like old school basketball.
It's a team game.
It's a team game. Exactly. But you're right. And so when you watch the girls play, much more relatable. Although there are a couple of girls who are unrelatable.
Oh, yeah.
There's no doubt about it. I mean, You know, there are a couple. I mean, Laura Davies back in her day could bomb the ball. Oh, yes. Now you've got the young
Lexi Thompson.
Lexi Thompson, who is, you know, she bombs the ball. And Brittany Lincecum, Bam Bam, you know, she bombs the ball. So there's still a number of, there's a couple. But for the most part, by and large, and especially at the U.S. Amateur, where the girls are younger and younger every year.
These are high school kids.
Oh, they're younger than that. I mean,
And like I said, they can't hit the ball any distance of note, but they score as well as anybody, which is the one thing I do want to say. You know, getting back to my
the Women's Open,
the Women's Open, and also my, you know, love hate relationship with the USGA. I would think if you're a casual fan, or if you're certainly if you're up on it, you would consider Sayree Pak to be. I mean, legend, is that too strong a word?
No, I mean, think she is, especially...
I mean, certainly in Korea. I mean, in Korea, she is the reason why you have this Korean explosion on the LPGA Tour.
Right.
So Sayree Pak played her last competitive round at a U.S. Open yesterday.
Right.
And the USGA, which is meticulous in every detail that they love... from the setup of the golf course to the volunteers to organizing, even right down to the pairings and the tee times, it was disgraceful that Sayree Pak played in one of the last groups yesterday afternoon, to a point where I had to go onto Facebook Live to watch her last two holes because Fox had gone off the air an hour before, maybe an hour and a half before Sayree Pak was even finished with her round. How the USGA couldn't put her pairing at least in a more reasonable time frame so that at least the television audience could understand what that woman has meant to an entire country of golfers.
I would say that that's a gross miscalculation on their part. And to get back to your question, is she if you are familiar with the game of golf, I put her in a legendary status. Depends on how you define legend. I mean, if you're talking about one of the most important, you know, when you look back, is she up there with,
she's certainly
with
influential.
Right, with the Wrights. And, you know, and all the and those people, I mean, she's not one of the founding.
She's not Babe Digdrington. Let's put it that way.
Right. And she's not one of the,
Nancy Lopez.
Not one of the founding members of the LPGA.
No.
But I think she's one of the, I would say, she's an important person in the history of the LPGA. I mean, there's no question about it.
Yeah. And so, like I said, and I think she deserved a little bit better, let's say, recognition from the USGA for how she contributed to the game.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we're going to take one last break. We'll be back to wrap things up. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
Pete's Golf. Since 1979, Pete's Golf has been practicing the art of club fitting and has been selected as a top 100 club fitter by Golf Digest magazine. At Pete's Golf, we use the best technology available to create an exceptional fitting experience for every customer that walks into our store. Visit petesgolf.com or call 516-248-6891. That's 516-248-6891 and get your next set of clubs fit for you.
All right, welcome back to On Par with Anthony Scorsia, here with Steve. Steve, what do you think of, we've got 1 minute left, we've got the Open Championship coming up, who do you like in that?
Well, that's a good question. Dustin Johnson is always...
I just need to know because I want to know who not to pick at Ladbrokes.
Yes, very very well played. Yeah. You need to come up to Saratoga with me and watch my expert horse racing handicapping also, so you know who not to bet up there. I have strangers at the track coming up to me and say, "Who do you like?" And I tell them, like, "Okay, good, I'm not going to bet on it."
Yeah, right. Well, we haven't called you Munch yet.
No, that's true. So I just, you know what, Dustin Johnson's playing great. I'll go with Dustin Johnson one.
Yeah, I mean it's
and he says he's not gonna play in the Olympics, so he's gonna concentrate fully on his performance at Royal Troon, and you know, the way the guy can hit the ball 300 yards dead down in the middle of the fairway, I mean, you know, that's the key to an open championship is stay out of the bunkers, and yeah. that's what he does.
Lots of people expecting big things from him now that he's sort of broken the seal.
He has broken the seal. He's opened the floodgates, and we'll see.
In my opening statement in Living in Interesting Times, we didn't even mention the Olympics, which would add to fabric of this these interesting times. That's all the time we have, folks. So it's a little overcast, but there's no rain, certainly no lightning. So make sure you get out there and play, and don't forget to see your local PGA professional. My thanks to Steve for joining me this morning. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Have a great week, folks.